Welcome to the Fleur Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fleur on Friday, the 26th of September, and I'm recording at 9:35 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first, let's have just a quick look at what's happened in here. In the short term, I won't review the whole week, although you'll be quite familiar with it, I'm sure. But I'll have a look at today, other than just to say that it's been a choppy, nervous week here overall. But for the most part, stock markets, at any rate, ended the week better than they started, or in the earlier part of the week, and that's usually a fairly good sign. Okay, so what happened in the Asia-Pacific region here today, just in this quick review? Well, Japan was down, and nearly, on average, 1%, but, and remember, this is following the big decline that we saw on Thursday on Wall Street, but Japan closed at its highs of the day. You can see that on the candlestick charts. It had opened right at the lows, and which are well down, but then steadily regained, but not enough to be up on the day overall. But nevertheless, Japan is right up there, not far away from its highs overall, and remains quite steady. China, it's one that I favor for not coupling with the U.S. market so much, but you get a little variation between Hong Kong, which is of course a Chinese territory, and the mainland. And the mainland had a modest gain, the Shanghai comp up just over 0.1%, whereas the Hang Seng index was down 0.3% overall. And we've seen a potential upside failure. Well, it is an upside failure at the moment. It's not a really significant one yet, but that sums it up. The India stock market closed higher. It had had a sharp fall yesterday. It didn't regain all of that, but nevertheless, no momentum to the downside follow through there overall. And one of the bigger falls, Jakarta, that's Indonesia, of course, down 1.32%. But overall, looking at these markets, I'll get back to my review. Let's just cut through the other developments here today that might be of interest to you. Looking at government, U.S. government bonds, yields edged up a little bit on the 10-year, 2.5276, but these are very much range-bound here overall. And the U.S. dollar, which has been so firm, and it continued in here today. That's one of the big stories here of the last couple of months, is that the dollar has really seen a significant recovery against just about every currency. One, interestingly, that it has not risen against is the Chinese renminbi. It's actually declined against the Chinese renminbi. Go figure, because you remember the Chinese renminbi was terribly strong, and then a few months ago they intervened to weaken it, but it's now regained, I think, at least two-thirds of what it had lost by that on that little devaluation. Okay, and in commodity markets, well, the CCI index, that's a cumulative commodity index, that stopped falling at any rate, very oversold, but nothing like an upward dynamic in there. And it's still below that lateral support level that it broke. And in the commodities or individual commodities, well, we've got live cattle very, very strong, but that's really an exception. You've got cocoa that's really quite strong overall, but most of them are weak, and the grains and beans are among the very weakest. I hear the industrial metals, well, they've been holding up better than the precious metals. And precious metals is interesting. Some of them got clipped again in here today. Palladium, which is back below the 800, is down to 782, and so that's really completely lost its form. And in contrast, silver's the one decent gain in here. One gain in here today is a little higher. It's 18 cents higher at up at 1762. But and it had been the weakest prior to well overall on this slide. Platinum not good here along with palladium, but 1303, nearly 1304. It's down over $10. Gold a little lower, $1,218. That's down 3.5. So that's the picture overall. Now let's get back to what we think about these markets here. First, we have a nervous environment, as you know. There have been all those geopolitical pressures, and some people say, well, geopolitical pressures really don't mean all that much. Markets can resist them, certainly, and there are other factors that are even more important. But where we need to be a little bit careful here is that the geopolitical, the main geopolitical pressures here from Russia to the Middle East, those are also costing expenditure, treasure, in other words, because you've got the sanctions battle with Russia. And that's particularly costly for Europe, especially costly for Russia, but also for Europe. And then there's some anxiety, Russia talking about the fact that it might nationalize some of the foreign companies in the country. So there's a little bit of brinkmanship going on here. And then also there's been the need to top up NATO, make it a little bit more somewhat more respectable force. And the expenditure of the this unknown chapter on the expenditure of the air raids, largely air raids against ISIL in the Middle East, and we're told that that's going to go on for a long time. So those factors all cost money. There's the Alibaba hangover. I won't repeat all the things that I mentioned yesterday in a review if you want to see it, my lead section here. But there are a lot of factors that could trigger that long overdue 10% plus correction on Wall Street. But that hasn't happened, as you know. I think it's gone over 500 days, something like that, something outrageously long. And the main reason for that, overwhelmingly so, is Fed monetary policy, which has been extremely bullish. And I'll just read you a little quote of Janet Yellen's, which is in the Weekly View, which I'll be posting later today. Here, her recent comment, quote, "It's not that the Fed is behind the curve in failing to return the funds rate to normal levels when the economy is recovered. It is rather that, in order to achieve such a recovery, it's necessary and appropriate to have a somewhat more accommodative policy." So, there we have it. Yellen obviously believes that the economy has not fully recovered, and she's certainly right about that. We have a very slow growth rate, and therefore she is going to end this quantitative easing next month. The market's a little bit nervous about that, but the chances of an interest rate hike in the first quarter, I think, are fairly remote. And I think it could be, we might get through all the way into and perhaps beyond mid-year next year before we see a cautious quarter point hike in short-term interest rates. So you could say that in terms of monetary policy, well, I will say in terms of monetary policy that the sweet spot still remains. Now, therefore, if we don't get a 10% or so correction on Wall Street between now and the end of October, which seasonally is a little tricky period, as you know, if that doesn't happen, the Fed is almost entirely responsible for that, and it's an environment that's going to continue for a while longer. Now let's go back, and it's well, just bearing one more point on that. It's just that if Wall Street remains steady, that's really pretty good for the rest of the world's stock markets here generally. But global investing is always an international beauty contest, and who looks the most beautiful in here? Well, starting with the Asia-Pacific region, I think Japan, you know, it's got an awful lot going for it. And I think that government employees' pension fund, which is a biggie, is going to be shifting some money into the stock market overall. And the yen is still softening in here, and that's very good for Japan's exporters, which have continually been among the better plays in here. So you remember my forecast going way back to last year when Shinzo Abe started to do this. I said, well, at minimum, we're going to get a heck of a good rally, which we certainly saw last year, went up about 50%. But there is a very good chance that we would get at least a cyclical bull market, but that Japan was also a candidate for a secular bull market. Well, I'll stick with that. What we're seeing is at minimum a cyclical bull market, and no evidence whatsoever that it's over. There have been plenty of doubts about it all along the way. I see far more expressions of doubt and worry about Japan than I see optimistic comments overall. But it still looks good to me. Vietnam looks like a very good recovery situation to me, provided China doesn't mess around with it. They are historic enemies, but they also trade a lot together. Well, China is Vietnam's biggest trade partner, but hopefully China will settle down and not be aggressive on territorial rights there. But I do like Vietnam, obviously. China A shares, really, this is awfully, awfully good, extremely attractive valuations. Yes, it underperformed for a heck of a long time, but I think it's quite clear now that the government is encouraging a stock market recovery. About time, too. And the market, it looks good. Finally broken that long progression of lower rally highs that we'd seen on that Shanghai Composite Index. But again, these valuations, you know, when you're talking about 11% for the market on that index, compare that with so many other stock markets around the world, not least on Wall Street. And people have been so bearish of China overall. China has succeeded in slowing, if not breaking, this property bubble. I know some people are now worried that you may well see a property crash in there. I doubt that very much. They're also encouraging people to go back into the stock market. And China. But, well, I've said it. It looks very attractive to me here overall. And there's nothing really bad in the Asian region generally, but I'm just pulling up my favorites here. India, up in here today, following, you know, it had a weak day yesterday, but it was pretty much unaffected by what Wall Street did overnight. And It's in a consolidation phase here overall, which is hardly surprising since it's been a world leader. Within that consolidation phase, the Sensex index is still up nearly 27% this year in US dollar terms. So no bad thing, and the currency's steady. Narendra Modi, I wrote about him again yesterday. This guy is special. He's obviously hugely intelligent. He's very diplomatic. He's got a lot of wisdom, I feel. He's also a charismatic figure here. And hey, what about that satellite going around Mars? What an amazing achievement. It just shows what kind of potential India actually has, and that people think of it as just being a very third world country. And well, there's plenty of that we know in India, but they've got these educated Indians are in leadership positions all over the planet, and India itself is starting to come together under Modi's leadership. And I think this is a future superpower, and I'm certainly going to stay very, very long in India as long as Narendra Modi is around. Okay, what about Europe? Well, wouldn't it be wonderful if Europe recovered? And I just hope that at some stage, that they get the unelected bureaucrats out of these positions of power, and just move to more entrepreneurial policies. But they've got generally socialist agendas in these countries, and well, that's what they want, and in their democracies. And so if that's what they want, fine. But I think the growth will be it would be somewhat slower. The northern countries are doing much, much better, led by Denmark. But they're all doing well up in that part of the world. And then Germany, it's a global power here overall. And the weak euro is which continued in here today. It's under that 127. Here it is at 126.83. Well, I think it's certainly going to go to 125, and then people will have a little rethink, and could easily go lower. But already the euro is competitive, and for an exporter like Germany, well, that's great news. And what about the USA? Well, what can you say in here? They've got a lot going for it, My big concerns are over the short to lengthy medium term, and I think I'll apply that not just to the USA, but also to a lot of other countries that all the other countries that experience the big credit crisis recession. It takes a long time to recover from that, as you know, from given all the deleveraging that actually occurs. But the U.S. is leading among big economies, is leading that recovering process, and I agree with Janet Yellen in terms of her assessment of where it is. I don't think this is going to turn into a deflationary problem. That it's a risk for Europe, but not for the USA, and Europe can beat that. I mean, Mario Draghi knows what he's doing. Charge of the European Central Bank, of course. So, it's just this lengthy medium term. I don't think it's going to be outright bearish. And my long-term forecast, as you know, on stock markets, is that we would be entering, and I've said this for what, a couple of years. I've said that towards the end of this decade, we would see clear evidence of a well of a secular bull market. I was going to say. I mean, you don't you really see that more with hindsight. But the potential. I was talking about the potential for a clear secular bull market. Once economies get back to normal GDP and monetary policies, and that the U.S. would be one of the leaders of that secular bull market, and the planks of that really were that it is leading in this era of accelerated technological innovation. It's just unbelievably exciting, isn't it? And I just think that will go on for, well, there's no limit in terms of technological innovation. And so why is it actually accelerating? It's not that people are getting more interested in technology or spending more on it. Not at all. It's just that the capabilities, all the miniaturization, that is, as the processing becomes more and more sophisticated, and so they can do so much more. That's the whole, that's the key to this accelerated rate of technological innovation that we're actually seeing. And again, I still meet people who say, well, I don't think that's happening at all. They're not spending on this. Well, I just addressed that point. They are, of course, spending on it, but they don't have to expend hugely. They have to expend intelligently, like India getting its satellite to Mars successfully. Again, people say to me, well, you know, nothing's really happened other than mobile phones. And I say, you got to be kidding. Just think back 10 or 20 years and just look at all the technological changes that are occurring. And we're just still in the foothills of this accelerating rate of technological innovation. So I think that's just going to run forever, and it will take a doomsday rock to end it. Now, and I'm not in the business of forecasting that. And the other huge factor that, again, I've been talking about this for, gosh, at least 2 to 3 years, is that we would see energy prices decline in real terms. Now, I was nervous about that because we've seen some duff energy policies, my goodness, haven't we? And building these just these horrendous gigantic windmills, and I won't digress too much on that or at all in going forward from here. But you know, it is a number of factors are coming together here quite effectively. Again, technology is such a big player in all of this. It's not just fracking, although fracking is very, very, very big. Made the U.S. Virtually energy independent, as you know. And that's something that people thought was never going to happen. This molten salt nuclear capability, that's something that I posted another article on that. So we're not going to see anything along those lines for at least a decade. But they're working on the technology that nuclear technology that is vastly safer, and it uses the nuclear waste, which is a huge problem. And instead of things remaining dangerously radioactive for thousands of years, that nuclear waste would be greatly reduced, and also made, well, it would greatly shorten the life of its ongoing radioactivity. So there are all these, that'll be at least a decade away. Solar, look at the potential there. And I think we will see people using solar applications increasingly, and the productivity or the yield of those will continue to rise. as and there are other renewable vectors that are certainly going to help here overall. So it's just a very exciting field, and now we're seeing oil prices for the first time come away from that higher dangerous level of their range. And I think prices of crude oil below $100, well, that's good news here overall. Mind you, the dollar is stronger here, but I'm very hopeful in that respect. And then there's the triumph of capitalism and the growing populations, the speed with which technology crops up all over the places are helping these economies to recover. Look at China's growth over the last 30, 40 years. Look at what India is going, or watch what India achieves under Modi. We're seeing GDP growth rates in emerging markets pick up despite the credit crisis recession aftermath that we're seeing in many of the developed economies. So I think it's very attractive out there. Before we get into a big liftoff like that, though, we'll get some choppy environments as we get back to normal policies on interest rates. Then there are the inevitable global tensions that'll produce corrections and perhaps some small cyclical bear markets, the 20, 30%. I don't think anything like that's beckoning here right now. Overall, I would say don't ever be surprised if you get a choppy environment in stock markets, and it's just part of what is normal for the industry. But long-term investors, you really can do very, very well in here. And I'm awfully glad that our policy has been to stay long, stay fully invested here in equities. What I would advise and have advised, but I'll repeat it very, very quickly, is that be careful about leverage. Be careful in expensive markets. You'd be leveraged in China, but I wouldn't be leveraged in the USA. So be careful about that. I think be careful about chasing stocks that are clearly in uptrends, but accelerating way up above those uptrends, because they can come back with a thump. If you are wanting to lower your risk, just go in for the autonomies with big fat attractive yields, and you'll have much less downside risk in those. And they may well underperform. They often do, but there's some good value companies out there. And in some respects, what we've seen over the last year or more, 18 months or so, is again the love of technology. That's very understandable, pushing these companies sharply higher here overall. We saw this on a much, much more worrying and dangerous scale back in 1999 and 2000, when we had a mania in technology, and a lot of those companies weren't making any money, and weren't going to make any money for years and years. Well, it's far different today, obviously. But then we had all the talk about old economy stocks, and these are just everything else. And they were cheap and had very, very good yields and did very well, going from 2002 through into 2008, before that big sharp bear market. But so it's a little bit like that. There are a lot of blue chips, to use that somewhat old-fashioned term, but you'll know what it certainly know what I mean. And some of these big autonomies that aren't quite as exciting in investors' eyes in terms of technological potential, but offer attractive yields. Those are not anything that's clearly less expensive than the U.S. stock market indices, and is a leader in its industry with a decent yield, is an attractive proposition in my book. Okay, much too long on that. Now, what about these bonds? So, well, we don't have too much in the way of inflation risk here right now. As a matter of fact, that risk of that, or the possibility of that, has actually been pushed back by more slow growth. Just continuing that sweet spot here a little bit. There's plenty of monetary accommodation around the globe here overall. So in terms of bonds, there's a good chance that the yields move up slowly. And I think that's what we're more likely to see. I don't think that's attractive from an investment standpoint. And although very clever, experienced bond people can finesse that effectively enough, but it's not something that attracts me. But remember, we are at the end of what was a phenomenal secular bull market in bond markets, with soaring prices and falling yields down to record low levels, helped by the central banks buying up so many of these bonds, and that's still going on in a number of countries. But the long-term outlook, I feel, for government bonds is for yields to rise, and that's a dangerous environment. We're nowhere near them rising enough to cause serious problems for stock markets, but they'll get there one day. But not in our immediate future. That's for sure. Currencies, interesting, because we got this strong dollar, and about the only currency that isn't appreciating, that the greenback isn't appreciating against, is the Chinese renminbi, which is quite firm. That's good in terms of China's investment attractiveness, I actually feel, and I'm pleased because dollar recovery was a key long-term forecast that Owen and I have been talking about really for several years, just saying, it'll bottom out very slowly. These big swings take years, not weeks or months. And we've seen a strong recovery here, partly because people think that Yellen will be pushing interest rates up. Well, this time next year, maybe a little bit. Partly because people feel that the U.S. is doing reasonably well on the economic recovery. Well, yeah, it's not going to be in danger of a deflationary negatively deflationary environment. And it's attracted because there's enough global uncertainty or worries over geopolitical situations and economic problems in some countries to cause some international investors to crowd into the United States. So that's understandable, but that's all helping to push the dollar up. And I don't think, well, clearly the Fed is not yet concerned about this. At some point, the Fed will become concerned about it and try to, well, come in to intervene to pull the dollar back somewhat. But on a long-term forecast, I think that the dollar is likely to be one of the steadier currencies overall, not least because of its energy independence and its technology lead, and all the big autonomies that those dominant multinational companies that we talk about so often, that will also help the dollar. U.S. has got appalling tax policies. You know all about that. But it'll take a presidential election to correct that. But that'll make the U.S. even more competitive over the for the long term, and that will happen. I'm convinced of it. What about these commodities? So I've already talked about crude oil. I certainly don't think the price is going to collapse, but I think that, with every month that passes, the risk of a massive spike up in crude oil prices decreases. And agricultural commodities, in terms of these crop cycles, well, the weather, people have been worried about global warming and would that cause havoc, and we went through almost a biblical 7 years there of pretty dodgy crops, but 2014 has been a very good one, with a few exceptions. Coffee price affected in Brazil, and California had a very, very rough time there with the drought problems. But generally, particularly regarding these grains, beans, rough rice, prices are good for particularly for developing emerging market economies, poorer countries. And we don't have terrifying food shortages, not much of it at any rate, compared to what many people had been fearing. Precious metals, well, I think that we've seen so and heard so many reasons. You take something, take gold, and people can give you, it seems, 100 different reasons for why it might go up or should go up or why it will go down and not go back up. And when I hear all this, I sometimes think, it's not that complicated. And I think, what happened? What was the background? And one of the reasons why we use charts, just to so we can see so clearly what actually happened before. And we had this long bear market in gold. Up until that sort of 2001, 2002 period. And that long bear market led to a long bull market cycle. And that peaked in 2011. And I think that once that clearly lost its form, and it was silver that was the lead indicator on that, as so often, that and I didn't call it as well as I should have, partly because I made not a boast, it was just riding the bull market. I just made so much money in gold and silver on the way up, and that does affect your thinking a little bit, and you don't want it to end. I'm always annoyed with myself when that happens, but it is a human reaction. I try to avoid those, but at any rate, the point is, after you've had 9, 10 years of a bull market in precious metals, even if there's a secular trend there, which I suspect it is, in other words, I certainly don't expect to see us going back to what we saw at the beginning of this century in terms of precious metal prices. But not least because of all the money printing that's taking place. But once you do break the back of that consistent bull market, you get a fairly lengthy, long, at least several years of bearish conditions. Now, that's, I feel, what we've been experiencing. And I think it's quite logical. It's a natural reaction, and what's natural about it? Well, because people go from fear and disbelief to interest, and then excitement, and then falling in love with precious metals, and then the run ends, and gradually all that sentiment is unwound, and then they get quite bearish, and they're becoming certainly more bearish here overall. My guess is that there isn't a huge additional move to the downside ahead of us. But, you know, we do know Goldman Sachs still talking about that 10, 1050 level. I think that's too far, but markets do also overshoot. So I don't know. I don't know where this is actually going to bottom out. But I suspect that we're in the latter stages now. You know, we're coming up, to three and a half years. Of a bearish trend. Maybe we get another year or so on that, but I certainly don't expect it to be a 9-10 year run in bearish conditions, given all the monetary printing that we've actually seen overall. So there we are. It's still not still not performing, and you can monitor that chart that I keep mentioning, and just look at the performance of gold relative to the Dow, and it's got other similar comparisons, silver as well, and I think we may have to see a significant disruption of the terrific bull market that we've been enjoying in equities before we get a really significant recovery again in precious metals. They don't always go in opposite directions, but that I'm thinking out loud that obviously that's my guess at this stage. I think it's good to have a little bit of gold in one's portfolio as it's coming down, just as it has its hedge qualities, but I would keep it small, and mine is certainly small, and I'm certainly not making any money on it in here, but I'll hang on to it. But you know, in terms of my, I can only guess, but my guess is it's maybe 1% of my equity portfolio. So there we are, and I think I've pretty well come to the end on this run. And well, thank you for your interest and time, and all the very best to all of you. Have a fantastic weekend.